Hello, everyone. We'll be starting the Root KSK Roll session very shortly. Could I have the presentation up on the screen, please? We'll be starting in 30 seconds, please. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Root KSK Rollover Update session. Hopefully, there are people in this room who have not seen me deliver this content already, this ICANN meeting. Hopefully. Here we are. Let me start by giving you a recap of how we got to today. As I think everybody knows, if you have enough interest to be in the room, the Root KSK rollover was originally scheduled for October 11th, 2017, but we decided to postpone that. VeriSign analyzed RFC 8145 Trust Anchor report data, and they found that around 7 to 8% of the resolvers that were reporting, which admittedly is a relatively small number at the time, had only what we call KSK 2010, or the current Root Zone KSK. They did not have the new Root Zone KSK. So something was not right with those 7 to 8%. ICANN's Office of the CTO research team repeated that analysis with traffic from different root servers, and we found essentially the same thing, depending on exactly when you look at it, the percentage is higher or lower, but it was still a higher percentage than we were comfortable with, and more importantly, we didn't understand the reason why those resolvers were reporting the old key. So we decided to pause the root KSK roll and try to determine why those resolvers had the old key. So we took a list of 500 resolvers that in the month of September 2017 had reported only the old key, only KSK 2010, tried to track them down, and we found out that tracking down operators based on just the IP address is hard. We knew that. This was an existence proof of that. We could only get in contact with 20%. That would be about 100 addresses, and of those, the majority were in IP address ranges known to host ephemeral things like virtual machines or containers. There's also an issue with RFC 8145 in that the signal itself is sent as a DNS query, so that means it does things like get forwarded from one resolver to another. So we know that forwarding was going on, which that obscures the signal. You could be thinking that a particular resolver has only KSK 2010. That resolver could be fine. It could be a resolver behind it, forwarding to it, that reported only KSK 2010. So the upshot here was that there was no smoking gun single cause, which would have been ideal. If there would have been one or two root causes, we could have potentially talked to vendors to fix bugs had we found them. We could have adjusted our communication message, but that wasn't the case. So with no clear path forward revealed by that research, the ICANN organization decided to ask the community for input. Now we're up to about late December 2017. We said that we would accept input and discussion on the KSK-rollover at ICANN.org list, which is a list dedicated to this project for updates and discussion. And I'd suggest that if you're not on that list, please do subscribe. It's very low volume at this point, but it's how you'll stay updated with the project. So the results of the discussion, there was general agreement that there really wasn't a good measurement here. The design team that ICANN convened, that now it's been over 2 years ago that they made their report upon how to roll the Root Zone KSK, made recommendations. They suggested that a good measurement would be number of users affected, and they suggested that 0.5% of users affected would be a sign after the Root KSK roll that there were significant enough problems to merit rolling back. So if number of users, that's a very reasonable measure, but that's also a very difficult measure, and that's not what the RFC 8145 data is telling us. There was hope among the people who weighed in that there would be better measurements in the future, and they were looking forward to something called, it's now come to be called Sentinel, which is a draft that Warren Kumari from Google and Jeff and Joao from APNIC are working on that would allow user-based measurement. But we're not there yet today. And the consensus among that group was that ICANN should roll the key in a timely fashion and keep doing the outreach that we'd been doing. So based on that feedback, on February 1st, we published a draft plan, and I want to emphasize that it's a draft plan for the KSK rollover. And the components of that plan were, first, we're going to delay it 1 year. We'll roll it on October 11th, 2018. We had hoped that the discussion on that list would yield criteria to measure. We didn't have anyone suggesting any particular criteria. We're also going to continue the outreach, things like this very meeting, publicizing the KSK role. And we are going to publish more observations about Trust Anchor data, namely the RFC 8145 data, even though we continue to, as each day goes on, I have less and less confidence in what that data is actually telling us, if it's really telling us anything that's useful or just giving us an alarming signal that's not really terribly relevant to the project. So an important point here is that we have a public comment period open. This plan is only a draft, and it is subject to input from the community. We really, really want to hear from the community and get feedback on the proposal. So that public comment period closes April 2nd, and there is the URL for the page that explains it at the bottom of the slide. If we end up proceeding with the plan, the timetable and the plan as it is now in the draft plan, it would be something like this. April 2nd, the comment period ends. Mid-April, the staff report needs to be published, as just like any ICANN public comment. We'll also revise the plan as necessary and publish that. If you're not familiar with the cadence of ICANN board meetings, the ICANN board meets six times a year. It meets at each ICANN meeting, so that's three times. And then in between each ICANN meeting, it has what's called a board workshop where it meets. So the next ICANN board meeting will be in mid-May at its board workshop. And at that point, we will request that the board make a resolution asking ESSEC and also RSEC, have not updated the slides, ask ESSEC and RSEC to review and comment on the plan by October 1st. We will likely have another session in Panama to talk about the root KSK role. And then on August 1st, we'll hope to have received ESSEC and RSEC's feedback, and we will make any revisions to the plan. If those revisions do not call for a different date than October 11th, 2018, then by mid-August, we'll have published that final plan. And at the September board workshop, we'll ask the board for a resolution directing the ICANN org to roll the key on October 11th. So that's where we are. That's where we're headed. Again, I can't emphasize strongly enough how much we want community feedback and would like people to weigh in on the public comment. I'd like to spend the rest of the presentation talking about the signal that we're getting, the data that we're getting via this RFC 8145 Trust Anchor reports. At this point, the ICANN office of the CTO has access to RFC 8145 data from, actually the slide is now out of date based on late-breaking developments from 12 root servers. We added H to the list of servers that are providing us data. The initial analysis in late 2017 used PCAP data from BDNF. But since then, we've been using Duane Wessels' excellent plugin to DNSCAP. So the root operators run DNSCAP, and that analyzes the traffic in real time. And every 60 seconds, this plugin batches up a report of statistics that it's seen, as well as Trust Anchor reports that it's seen. And it sends them as DNS queries, which is quite clever, to a zone that ICANN Octo operates. You can see examples of what those reports look like. There's a timestamp. There's the source IP delimited with dashes rather than dots. The trust anchors are notated in a four-digit hex number. 4A5C is KSK 2010, 4F66 is KSK 2017, and then you see a node ID and a root server ID. So based on all that, we can compile this graph. So you can see how, as time has progressed, we're getting more and more reports from additional servers. Let me explain this graph because it might not be completely obvious at first glance. The three lines are plotting two different things. The red and green lines are plotting number of IPs that are reporting 8145 data, and you read those on the left axis, the number of sources. So you can see that over time at this point, look at the green line, that is the total number of sources reporting Trust Anchor data. And these would be unique sources per day. So at this point, about 50,000 unique IP addresses are reporting Trust Anchor data to us every day. The red line is the number that are reporting that they have only the old key. So if you divide the red line by the green line, you get a percentage, and that percentage is plotted on the black line, and that scale you need to read off the right-hand y-axis. And you can see that we're now at about 20% of the resolvers reporting say that they have only the old key. Note that there's a big spike in mid-January where we suddenly got a lot more people reporting and where the percentage number got worse. We are fairly certain that that is the result of an upgrade to Unbound. Unbound 168 was released in mid-January, so the timing fits perfectly. And that release was to deal with a security vulnerability. So our hypothesis is that because this was a security-related patch, people were motivated to upgrade Unbound. However, there's no drop-off in KSK 2010 reports after 30 days. So if someone upgrades Unbound in place and does not run the Unbound Anchor tool, let me say this the other way. If someone upgrades Unbound and they run the Unbound Anchor tool, they will immediately update their Trust Anchor store with the right data, and they'll have KSK 2010 and 2017. It's common to upgrade in place and not run Unbound Anchor. So that would mean you'd now have a version of Unbound that's still configured with the old key. But if it's properly doing RFC 5011, after 30 days, it should run that process and realize that it should configure KSK 2017 as well. So why hasn't that happened? And one hypothesis for that is that if these are ephemeral virtual machines or containers, you could imagine one of those coming up having the old key, reporting the old key via RFC 8145. I say old key, I should strictly speaking say KSK 2010. So it reports KSK 2010. It runs for, let's say, a few hours, a few days. It's shut down. It never has time to complete the RFC 5011 add hold down timer. And the next time it's brought up again, it starts all over. It still has only KSK 2010. It reports KSK 2010 via 8145, and that process repeats. We need to do further analysis. At some point, you need to stop working on your slides and fly to Puerto Rico to present them, which is where we are now. And so one of the things we need to keep doing is looking at the particular IPs, how often they occur, how often the reports occur. You know, we know that Bind and Unbound make these 8145 reports on a fairly regular cadence. So if we see IPs that are not doing that, one reasonable assumption is that they are ephemeral, they're coming up and coming down. That's not possibly the only reason, but that's why we're doing research to try to figure that out. Here are graphs for individual root servers. So these graphs are the same as this graph is for all root servers. These graphs are for the, at the time, 11 root servers that we have data from. You can see that the data, different servers we have data from different time periods. If you look at the graphs, they're relatively similar with the exception of JRoot, which has a lower percentage reporting. So JRoot looks better than all the others, at least in terms of percentage. Duane Wessels reports that we're not getting reports from all the JRoot instances, and so that possibly has a bearing on that. The point here is there's not really vastly different data among the different root servers. What I do think is interesting is the behavior change that happened in mid-January when we saw that spike. So this graph shows unique IP addresses added each day. So the data point here represents on that day how many sources are reporting data to us that we've never seen before. So if you look at from reading from the left to the right, we were humming along with just, you know, maybe looks like never more than 1,000, a few hundred new IPs every day. Suddenly after this hypothesized upgrade event in January, we now see many more unique sources reporting per day, you know, around 15, 16,000. Now, if you were to plot a graph with how many cumulative unique IPs do we see every day, that would be this graph. So the green line then shows at any given point in time, how many unique IP addresses have we seen? So obviously that number starts very small on the left earlier in time. The further we go ahead in time, the more unique IP addresses we've seen, whereas of right now, the number is about 730,000. So to date, we have had 730,000 different IP addresses, and I haven't said this so far in the presentation, this is a combination of V4 and V6 addresses. About 730,000 have reported data to us. Of those, about 250,000 at one point or another reported that they had only KSK 2010. So the math on this calculation, when you look at the cumulative numbers where we are today, the math's even worse. It's about 35% of the total addresses we've ever seen report only KSK 2010. I decided to take a look at this by slash 24. So you can see the shape of this graph. It's slightly different. There was a spike in new slash 24s after the January increase, and then it has tapered off a little bit. If I plot the cumulative, though, we still have a lot of slash 24s. Look at the green line; it's topping off at about 350,000. So that would be an average of, and admittedly, and we're losing a lot of resolution here. An average of two IPs per slash 24. I was hoping this number would be smaller to indicate that there would maybe entire net blocks that had a whole bunch of addresses in them, and we could investigate those. And a good hypothesis for that would be that maybe they were address blocks that had only dynamic ephemeral machines in them. So that is a lot of addresses. What's interesting is that the total number of addresses that report either KSK 2010 or KSK 2010 and 2017, that number is larger than the total number of unique IPs. So what that means is that there are sources that have reported, I have KSK 2017, they have reported, I have KSK 2010, and then they've reported, I have KSK 2010 and 2017. Not necessarily in that order, but they've made both reports. One reason that might happen, imagine a source reporting KSK 2010, and then sometime later they report KSK 2010 and 2017. One reason, but not the only possible reason, but one reason for that is that machine upgraded. It now has the new KSK. But out of this nearly 750,000 IPs, only about 1,550 report both. So that means there's not a vast number of machines that we can point to and go, oh, look, one hypothesis is that they upgraded. And part of the problem here is that there's really a problem with the 8145 signal. We know that there are forwarders involved, as I mentioned, so just because you see a report from a source IP, you have no guarantee that it's that source IP's configuration you're seeing. It might be someone else forwarding their 8145 report reflecting their configuration to that IP, which then forwards to a root server and we see it. So that's another explanation why you would see a single source reporting KSK 2010 and KSK 2010 and 2017. We also know that there's an implementation, at least one version of an implementation, that reported 8145 data even if it wasn't validating. So if it had KSK 2010, it wouldn't matter because it was not doing DNSSEC validation and using that as part of its configuration. So it was configured for it, but it didn't matter. So if you want to look at these graphs yourself, we're updating them weekly. That is the URL for them. roottrustanchorreports.research.icann.org. I've just started to slice and dice the data this way. This particular table is not based on the full 250,000 IPs that have currently, as of right now, reported on the KSK 2010. This is based on a smaller number, and I don't remember what the total number was off the top of my head. But this is looking at the number of sources per autonomous system, and then doing a reverse sort so that the ASNs with the most IPs reporting only KSK, or I beg your pardon, this is not only KSK 2010. This is all This is all autonomous system numbers reporting. So that would be a different chart if it were only KSK 2010. But what this does mean is I need to run this again looking only at KSK 2010, and it will allow us to make some contact attempts to find out what the what's going on with the ASs that have the most numbers of resolvers reporting only KSK 2010. So we have distributed a list of IP addresses that report only KSK 2010 to the ISPCP and the RIRs. And the goal here, goals are twofold. One, of course, is to get those systems upgraded. But also, we're still very interested to find out what's going on and why these systems aren't upgrading. You know, if we find, for example, the best result here, one of the best results would be to find out that there are indeed there's address space where there are a bunch of ephemeral machines and they're happen to be running an old configuration with only KSK 2010. That would be a positive finding. This slide is now out of date. I do have authorization from the powers that be within ICANN to make the list publicly available. So we're going to be publishing a page. It's going to look like this. I'm going to sort it in reverse order by ASN, and you'll be able to click on the ASN and get all the list of addresses from that ASN that reported on the KSK 2010. So it's going to soon be much easier for a given operator to find out what's happening in their network. And obviously then we will be reaching out to operators, starting with the ones with the most reporting only KSK 2010 and trying to find out what's happening. So the next steps, keep trying to figure out what's going on with this 8145 data. I'm not happy with the signal it provides, but it's as of now, it's the only data we have. And the responsible thing to do is to keep investigating to try to figure out what it's telling us. And if we get to the point where we're convinced that it's really not telling us anything that's valuable, that's in itself a positive finding. We're going to, as I said, try to contact networks that are reporting large numbers of resolvers with only KSK 2010. We're going to facilitate other people doing that investigation. We're going to keep talking about this, so you're going to keep seeing me and my colleagues. And we're going to keep listening to the community because, as I've said, ways you can help, please comment on the plan. There's the URL again. And please do join the KSK rollover list to stay up to date. And with that, I would be happy to take any questions. We have a little bit of time before the next event in here at 5.
It's Howard Benn from Samsung Electronics. Just on that slide you had with the all of the operators on, and the that's the one. So my guess is that the Reliance Geo network, which is probably their LTE network, is run totally on virtual machines and almost undoubtedly will never hit the 30-day limit. So it will be very interesting to see. There's a large number of mobile operators on there, whether or not they all suffer the same issues. But again, I'm happy to provide some contact information into GEO because that equipment is ours. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Mark McFadden with the ISPs, although speaking on my own behalf here. Could we go to slide number 4? That's the one. So I'm looking at the bottom of the slide where it says results of discussion and bullets 1 and 3, and I'm going to put them in my own words here. You can tell me that I've got it wrong. The first bullet says, we don't know what the effect of this is going to be on the internet. And the third bullet says, do it anyway. Am I misreading that?
That would be the glass half empty interpretation.
Could you do the glass half full reading for me so that I'm...
I think the whole rest of this presentation is the glass half full.
Okay. Let me give
the serious answer. The serious answer is that this is a hard problem to know what to do. And that when we got to the point we got to last fall, we decided that we needed to involve the community and get the community's input. And the summary you gave is what the community told us. I will point out that it's somewhat self-selecting who's on KSK rollover. Those tend to be people who are advocates for DNSSEC and have personal capital and who knows what else invested in DNSSEC and want to see the rollover happen. So I guess it wasn't surprising in retrospect that was the sentiment we got. But that's why the public comment is so important, so that we can expose it to a wider audience. And if people have a glass half empty interpretation of that, they could comment on it.
I appreciate that, and thanks for that explanation. And I continue to have the half empty perspective here. I can't, and I feel like I'm an advocate for DNSSEC, so I can't get over. And I will provide comments individually on this. I can't get over bullets 1 and 3. There's sort of a cognitive dissonance for me that anyone would actually seriously propose to introduce a change to the route where you didn't know what the effects were going to be. I agree with you, and I completely trust your analysis of the sort of poor quality of the signaling you're getting. But as every day goes on, the signaling that you do get, which is the only diagnostic information you have, the signaling you do get only gets worse. I mean, and that's my characterization of the situation. So I find this slide, I find all the slides that come after this very compelling, but it's this slide and bullets 1 and 3 there under the results of discussion that I can't get my head around. I don't know why anyone would say, I don't know anyone in the technical community would say, oh yeah, go ahead and proceed with a change to the route when you don't know what the results are going to be. But thanks, I'll make those comments in individual submissions as well.
Let me channel what I think another interpretation might be. I, this is not my interpretation, I'm just repeating what I've heard, which is that there also is potential downside to not rolling the key, and that it could decrease confidence in the key, even though there's no cryptographic threat to it at the moment, either threat from to the cryptography itself or the threat to the physical security or operational security of the key. Nevertheless, not rolling it could undermine confidence in the key, and if you combine that with a belief that it's not going to be so bad and people can fix it quickly, and you accept a little that there will be some breakage, you could combine all those things to believe we should roll the key.
So, and I understand the sort of reputational argument, right, is that, well, what we want to do is roll the key because we want people to have confidence in DNSSEC. And I understand the reputational part of that. On the other hand, if people are guessing wrong, and I'm shocked that we're down to guessing, that though it actually is worse than what we thought it was going to be, and we have to execute a rollback, right? And we haven't done that yet in the live world. I think we're in a reputational problem either way, and that puts ICANN in a hard position, and I'm sensitive to that. But I'm not as convinced that the DNSSEC reputational issue, on balance, is the same as an unknown implementation in October. Thanks.
Yep. Any other questions or comments? Kathy, do we have anything from the internets?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Thanks for your presentation. My question is that we have found out that in Nigeria we have 4 mobile network operators and a large number of ISPs. We have found out that only one of the 4 mobile network service providers is using DNSSEC. So, and the other 3 mobile operators are having other validation system other than, other than the DNSSEC. So what advantage, my first question is that, what advantage has DNSSEC over the other security validation systems? And is there any need that the other three mobile operators migrate to DNSSEC? And again, the third question is, what's the pet of the other, three network service providers that are using the other validation system after the KSK rollover? Thank you so much.
Could you repeat the last part of your question, please?
The last one?
Yeah, the last part of your question, please, yeah.
What I said, the last part of the question is that the three of the mobile network service providers are not using the DNSSEC validation system. Mm-hmm. Then what is their pet after the KSK rollover?
I'm sorry, what is their...
What is there going to be any effect on the users?
I see. So that's the easy question. If you are not doing DNSSEC validation, there's no impact at all from the KSK rollover. It's the position of the ICANN org that DNSSEC validation is a good thing. So, you know, we do encourage people to do DNSSEC validation. And I'm sorry, I don't remember the rest of the first part of your question.
No, the first part of the question, I said, is there any advantage for those that are not using DNSSEC to migrate to DNSSEC?
Well, right, and so that's where I was headed. I mean, it is ICANN org's position that you should do DNSSEC validation, because without DNSSEC validation, you have no assurance that the answer that you receive is really answering the question that you asked, and that it really is coming from whom you think it's coming from. So you don't have a cryptographic assurance that the answers you're getting are really where they're coming from. I mean, DNSSEC provides, you know that the answer comes from who it says it comes from, and that it hasn't been modified since it was signed. And modern resolvers have gotten very clever to avoid being tricked, but ultimately, to get a higher level of assurance, you need DNSSEC. So without DNSSEC, to a certain extent, you're vulnerable to being spoofed or tricked into believing responses that aren't correct.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you for coming.